Great ending to that track, Star Sign from Teenage Fan Club. You're listening to Steel City Music. Your host, Gunnar, here, hanging out with you this hour like I do all the time. Matt Jelly interview on the way, of course. But I put together a set of music of some requests that I didn't get to. And they came via the website, steelcitymusic.ca contact. And I'm just going to go through a couple of them. Got a request for some Ellis, because I spun a whole Ellis album. The person really dug the Drain, so thank you for listening. Also, Pete Townsend, a favorite of mine, cover of Save It For Later, English Beat. And I also know that it's John Conley's favorite cover as well, from Peter Townsend. And you can catch his show, Under the Covers on the Hawk, from 6 till 9 every Thursday. Well, he tries to do it every Thursday. He's trying as hard as he can. So hopefully his show will be there. You're doing a show though, aren't you, John? Come on now, don't screw around. I'm plugging you here. Also, you'll hear some TV on the Radio with the track "Could You," a band that I just don't think has enough accolades that was ever given to them. I mentioned earlier on in the show, I was going to spin some Droids Osaka. Here's All Senses Under Attack for you right now. On Steel City Music. Enjoy.
lovers. Must be a sucker for it. Cry, cry, but I don't need my mother. Just don't mind while I come to a decision on it. Sooner or later, your legs give way, you hit the ground. Save it for later, don't run away and let me down. Sooner or later, you hit the deck, you get found out. Save it for later. Are rocking through, but what can you do? I don't know how I'm meant to act with all of you love. Sometimes I don't try. I just now. Sooner or later, your legs give way, you hit the ground. Get found out, save it for later. Don't run away and let me down. And let me down. Run away, run away, and let me down.
My next guest here on Steel City Music is one half of the Jelly Brothers. Matt Jelly, you know him as for years as a social activist. Pain in the ass to people here in Hamilton, to an extent. and also a longtime friend of a lot of people here for social issues from Matt Jelly. I should say Matt Jelly from Jelly Brothers Printing, everything that has to do with art here in Hamilton. Matt Jelly, how you doing, sir?
I'm great. Yeah, I liked how it wasn't just a pain in the ass to like people in positions of power. It was just a people in Hamilton, all people,
all people in general.
He's just a plague upon our community.
I like that because it's just, you know, it's funny because we were trying to do this interview via Zoom and we both had some technical issues, and I had this really nice intro, but I thought was a very nice, warm and welcoming intro, and then now that we have to do it via phone, I'm like, you know, I don't think I got to explain myself all over again. I think I'm just going to just say it's just generally a pain in the ass to everybody, right? So there you go. Yeah. Hey, man. Welcome to Steel City Music. I'm glad that we finally had a chance to chat about everything. And I promised even before the interview, nothing political. Don't just leave it all alone.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about the small business startup and you know, all the things, how it's the growth of everything with Jelly Brothers. So why, if we could just walk back to the beginning of the Jelly Brothers, and I know we've spoken about this over the years in different mediums, but how it all started with yourself and your brother Dan starting up the Jelly Brothers printing and graphic design and everything.
Yeah, so we first, I guess I started making like local neighborhood maps back in 2011. I just started doing it as a sort of a weird little side project. I didn't really think much of it at the time. I had done sort of the first neighborhood map of central neighborhood and sort of downtown Hamilton for the neighborhood association had started at the time.
Right.
And it was just to show what the boundaries were of that neighborhood because there hadn't been an association there for quite some time. So that was the reason for me designing the first one, but I kind of liked the look of it and did a couple neighborhoods around central as well. I did Beasley, Duran, North End. And that was when that project first started. And then the next couple of years, 2012, 2013, my brother got involved. We started just doing little craft shows around town and festivals. I had started screen printing around the same time. And I was back then we were doing T-shirts and a couple other little projects, screen printed projects. And we just started doing shows here and there. And then I think maybe the next couple of years after that, 2014 on, we got a little bit more serious about it and it became our full-time job basically since then. So pre-COVID we were doing pretty much every major festival in town and some outside of town as well. And you know, obviously things have changed a little bit because of the pandemic for us. Like, I mean, a lot, but hasn't decimated us anyway. We had a pretty healthy Christmas season regardless. So, we're still plugging away at it.
And you said around 2014, you guys started, this was like, the inkling of, well, I guess we can do this, full time, making a go of it, as you will, as running a business. But was there any specific incidences where you were getting reactions from people to seeing some of the work that you were doing? Because for myself, I would always get the secondhand, third-hand conversations from our peer groups or friend groups of, hey, have you seen some of this? Have you seen this map that Matt and Dan have done? And I'm like, no, I haven't really seen all of the stuff yet. And then I would go down to Art Crawl and I would see people going in and start thumbing through and buying things. And to me, I was kind of struck back how people were interacting with the two of you, discussing, you know, the heritage of Hamilton and their neighborhood groups and asking questions, you know, have you done a map for this yet? That sort of thing. Was that around the time that you started was it that type of feedback that I'm explaining? One of the things to make a primary driver for you guys to think that, yeah, we can make a go of this?
Yeah. Like I remember the first, one of the first events that I can remember us doing was we did a maker's market, which was around the holidays. I guess 2012, I think was the year. And that was sort of the first time that we'd actually rented a table somewhere and put our stuff out. And at that point, I think I had all sorts of things that I was screen printing on, just any material I could get my hands on. I was printing things, but then at the corner of the table we had just a small pile of some of the maps that I had printed out. I had done like sort of a gallery show of the maps, and at that point I think I'd done probably most of the Lower City at that point, and so I had these things printed already, and I brought them as to the show just as like, oh, here's another thing we can throw on the table, kind of like it was very garage sale back mm-hmm. in the day.
Yeah,
that event, I remember, you know, people kind of gravitating towards them, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. And I think, like, they sold more than anything else I had under the table. And then it was the next summer we had done another event. It was they were doing, like, 1812, the 200th anniversary, something like that. I just remember a giant inflatable 1812 thing they had there.
What exactly are you describing? Where was this?
I just realized it's like an image in my head that's pretty clear, but to say what it, yeah, anyway, let's just, can you just edit out the word inflatable from this?
No, this all stays, buddy. It's so funny.
I have to ask that every time I do an interview.
Okay, no, so
we did an event at Bayfront Park, and it was kind of the same thing. It was watching people just gravitate towards the maps and flipping through them, and it kind of, that was around the time that we realized it's like, hey, we should do more of these, and and from that point on, it kind of blossomed into being our full time gig. So
that was your primary seller, was the maps to begin with. Like that pretty much starts everything for you guys.
Yeah.
Was there any other stuff that you were printing that you kind of thought, well, you know what, I think people would really take to this, and it was kind of like, no, this is going to be a Christmas gift.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing T-shirts, I was doing cards, like sort of little paper projects that I was doing here and there, but then that wasn't so much what was selling. It was the maps, and then I was doing, after that, doing silkscreen posters of landmarks, that kind of thing. And the maps are still the major thing. Of the screen printed posters, though, I do quite a lot of those as well. So I wouldn't say it's half and half, but probably like a third screen printed, and then two thirds of the business at least is maps. Yeah, so those are our main, that's sort of our main bread and butter. We've done other projects as well, like I did a coloring book a few years ago, buttons, and we've done magnets and stickers, that kind of thing. But yeah, by and large, it's the neighborhood maps are still our most popular product, I should say.
How does that work for you guys now? Because myself, I would always go out to different festivals like others, and I would see throngs of people going in and out of your whatever tent that you had set up. When you guys were doing this, were all the festivals for you guys starting successful in selling your merchandise? Because you guys were covering off on a fair bit of festivals. It seems such a foreign idea to us right now in the middle of this COVID pandemic that people would actually congregate together and buy things in the summertime or a festival of some sort. Because we go from James Street North out in front of the church and that social interaction to now you're doing like a circuit of smaller festivals and bigger festivals. What I'm trying to ask is, was everything as successful as you thought it would be, or were you surprised in the reaction or lack of interest in some festival areas?
Yeah, no, I think overall, I think it was more successful than I would have imagined at the start. I really thought the maps, when I was first making them, that, you know, it was a thing that people would be into for a year or whatever. And then, and I kind of didn't didn't think I would be into it for longer than a year or whatever. Yeah. It was like, felt very much just like a weird little project I was working on. But yeah, like, so overall it was, yeah, it was every festival that we were doing, we were, you know, it was worth our, you know, investment, because it wasn't, you know, there's not a lot of overhead. The, you know, printing costs was probably our major thing. And then it's, you know, there's money to sign up for festivals. But like, yeah, most of those that when we first started, we were, there weren't that many that we weren't at least breaking even. Like, we were doing pretty well, but there are a couple of events I can think of. We were kind of trying out all sorts of different types of festivals. Like, there's, you know, we did a rib fest at, it was the Waterdown Rib Fest. And, that one wasn't great for us. It was, early on, there was like a thunderstorm in the middle of it as well. So,
that doesn't help.
But it was like, no. It was like a 5-day festival, and we were kind of placed between, like a guy selling insurance and like a booth that was selling like, bamboo pillows. And
So
there wasn't, it was sort of like, yeah, it was, that was one that was kind of, sort of didn't work out for us. But then, we also tried to do, you know, their fall fairs. We tried to do the Ancaster Fall Fair. The placement of the booths wasn't great there. So, yeah, not a lot of traffic there. But those are the two examples. It's sort of, I think it's a good thing that I can, like, think of specifically those two shows and not like, oh, yeah, we bombed again and again. It
right.
was like, yeah, it worked out for us pretty well, I think.
Well, you pretty much always have to have like a little bit of a learning experience, like any other small business, that what works and what doesn't work. And I guess in that atmosphere of a festival circuit of selling your wares, once you do it once and you observe everything, you figure out where the best position of your booth should be or your vendor's table. But there's also another thing that that strikes with me is the cost of setting up a table, that sort of thing, like the effort of promotion, getting your wares out there versus not selling any. Is this more of a promotional venture for you guys to be in the public eye or not? Like, because you guys are, I mean, it's great that you guys were having this much success with the maps, but still there's an economics at play.
Yeah, I mean, the cost of, you know, like renting a table at festivals kind of varies, depends on the festival that you're looking at. And we've tried everything from very large events, kind of like Supercrawl, and to very small events that are like kind of a small street festival. And, you know, some of them it's like $25 to get a table, and some of them it's $500 or more to get a table. And I know there are events actually that we haven't done that are way more, costly than that, but, that's kind of the range that we've done. And yeah, I mean, obviously there's, you know, the more that you're paying for a booth, there's more of a risk. But it's pretty rare that it's not been worth doing for us, like an event. You know, and you never know, like, when you're doing outdoor events, obviously of any sort, sometimes you're going to run into weather, that kind of thing. And that's just unavoidable. You kind of have to take that, you know, you win some, you lose some with weather, but, but it's, like in terms of the way that COVID has affected businesses, I feel lucky compared to other businesses because, you know, we don't have the same kind of overhead or you know, we don't have the same responsibility to staff. Like it's just me and my brother that run the business. It hasn't affected us the same way that it would a restaurant or a traditional retail store. So I feel a bit lucky that way. It's obviously been you know, not having festivals all year, and that's sort of a big chunk of probably the majority of our business was coming from festivals. You know, but at the same time, it's like some of that's moved online and some of that's moved to our retail, you know. So it's it hasn't decimated our business the same way that I imagine it has others. So
This your host Gunnar here. You're listening to Steel City Music. My special guest right now is Matt Jelly from the Jelly Brothers. Just talking about the Jelly Brothers business and now the effects of just going right into my next question, which was actually going to be about how COVID is affected. But you've already explained most of it right there. So thank you, sir. but just to elaborate on that, I remember back when COVID just started, or we had inklings that there was this virus, but it wasn't. To us, it was just in our own news media, as we were absorbing it, it was something that was going on in other parts of the world. It didn't seem like it was going to affect us in any way. I mean, that's just the way it was. Kind of the feeling was at the time.
Yeah.
But I did notice something that you guys were pushing all along, and I attribute this to Dan, just because I know Dan and the way Dan thinks. You guys were pushing more things online even before that, for sales and how to get stuff. And even when it was just starting, I can remember reading Dan saying, yeah, we're going to move everything online more now, because we don't want people to be at risk, from this virus.
Yeah. I mean, like we've been selling products online from day one, kind of,
but he really pushed it though. I remember reading it. You guys were like really making a push.
Yeah, when it first started, actually, I think there was a time that we weren't sending anything out in the mail, so we kind of did shut down completely at one point. Just like I remember, there was concern when surfaces were more of a concern that the mail mail carriers, that kind of thing. There was a certain point where we were like, maybe this isn't the most essential thing to be going on right now.
Yeah.
And like, it was also too sort of in March or April of this thing. It was like, who's thinking about a neighborhood map right now? Right? Like, you're thinking about like, how many beans do I need to buy here? How are we going to, is society going to fall apart?
Like, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't thinking, you know. But oddly enough, it's like one of those things. It's like, as time went on and it was like people were doing their Zoom meetings and, people are doing a lot of stuff from home and just generally spending a lot more time at home. I think we have seen some business as a result of that, people want to have like a little thing in the background on their wall while they're doing a meeting or, you know, they're at home. So they're thinking more about decoration and stuff. So they're maybe buying a piece of art. And I think there's been a big push on, you know, like supporting local businesses, and it's kind of very much what we are. So, I think I think every business, or not every business, but some businesses, I think, unexpectedly, you know, have done okay during sort of the pandemic. Things have changed for people, and people have had more time to. Think about their surroundings at home. So, yeah, I think, oddly enough, that's helped us out a little bit.
It most definitely did, because you guys started rolling again and you started doing what some other businesses transitioned to. I remember when it first started, some of the bigger liquor companies were going, well, we're not going to make gin anymore. We're going to make hand sanitizer. And I was like, oh, that's the whole pulling together of society right there. Then you guys eventually were like, okay, well, you're going to start rolling again. You started putting out face coverings as an option. Now, has that taken off as like, did you have any expectations of what it would do?
So we were working with a company based in Montreal. It's sort of like a drop shipping company, which means, you know, you order a mask with our design on it through our website, and then they make it and they ship it out, kind of thing. So it hasn't been a huge thing. It was sort of, we didn't do it until around the fall. I felt weird about doing it early on. I thought like, this is a pretty serious thing and we shouldn't like
profiteer
off of it or whatever.
Yeah,
I had that idea about it, but it's sort of like, I don't know. It's also that, you know, you can buy a mask for $1.99 or you can buy a mask for $20. You know, they're all over the place kind of thing. But we just started doing that in the fall. And we sold a number of them. It hasn't been a huge thing for us, but I didn't expect it would be either. It wasn't. I just thought it was sort of a might as well kind of thing. Like there were designs that I'd already designed for other things that it was artwork I had already. So it was
kicking around.
Just like, yeah, let's throw some on some masks.
Well, because I looked at some of them.
Yeah, we have had some good.
Because there was I saw a couple of people wearing them. When I do venture out, I was like, wait a minute, that looks like the neighborhood mask, and that actually looks like the bus, like an old HSR bus that had, you know, like that looks great. So that's why I thought I would ask you about that, about how they did and if people were actually buying them, because it's kind of like, I don't know. There's a thing about when you're from a certain area and you can show what you're proud of, sort of thing. That's why you kind of gravitate to it. You show it off, you know. So,
yeah.
I thought the masks were an excellent idea. So I was asking, did they sell, or you know? But the
we did. There was, you know, when we first posted them, there was there was sort of a flurry of sales. It's slowed down a little bit since then. We haven't really done as much to promote the masks. It's been more about the posters and maps around Christmas time. But
with all these posters,
I think it was at a point too. It was sort of like, well, in September, it was sort of like we're in the long haul on this thing, and might as well put them out. And you know, it's a product that everybody has to use right now, so might as well put that out as an option. I still wear the $1.99 ones. It's a little bit like wearing your own band's T-shirt. So I haven't worn one of my own masks.
I was actually going to make that joke, and I'm glad that you beat me to the punch on that one.
I know how you work, Bob.
Yeah. We know you're a big fan. You don't need to wear the shirt. That's great. Thanks. We're all at the concert. Yeah, look at me. I'm a Kiss fan. Yeah, we know.
That said, I spent my entire 20s walking around in my own just jelly T-shirt.
That's
not even promoting a band. It was just my face. It was just in case you missed my face the first time. It was right there.
Hey, folks, it's Steel City Music. Your host Gunner here, my special guest right now, Matt Jelly, and we're chatting about Jelly Brothers collectibles, collections, everything you can find. You can find all of that on jellybrothers.com. Everything from face masks to prints to other collectibles, those kind of things. Another thing that I wanted to chat about was, I mean, just to go back to the prints, was something that struck me was it wasn't just local people that wanted their neighborhood printed. You know, because I know for me, if I were to see one where I grew up of a neighborhood, would be the Stipley area, Mayflower Street. I would bring back a flood of memories for me. So, you know, I would like to get one of those. But how was the reaction with the rest of, let's just say, Canada and their different regions? How far have you guys done them for? Because, you know, there's the Greater Toronto Area, which I would suspect would be like, let's get involved, you know, like Oakville, Mississauga, Brampton, as far as York region, those type of places, and Burlington, of course. But what about other areas of Canada? Like, say, has people from Ottawa, Vancouver, any of those places have seen your website and go, hey, have you done anything in this region? Can you do one for me?
Yeah, when we first started, we did sort of the Hamilton area first, and then sort of lower city, then we did the mountain, then Dundas and Ancaster. Eventually we had all of Hamilton, and we started to sort of branch out to other places. So we have all of Toronto now. Outside of that, we've done a lot in Ontario. It's kind of like we have people come to us all the time asking us to do new towns or whatever that we don't have. And we do them, you know, we don't really charge extra. We don't like consider it doing a custom order or whatever. It's like, especially if it's within Canada, it's like, we're going to find a second person will come along and buy that map if it's a town. And so we've done, I don't even know how many we've done now. I know it's over 1,000. But Dan, my brother Dan is sort of, he handles all of the new maps that are made. I did the first few hundred, but so like there are some that I've never seen myself that he's constantly working on new maps that people asked for. And we've done pretty much most university and college campuses across Canada.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, those are kind of a big hit. And we've done, we've done pretty much places, you know, towns across the country, not everywhere, but like we've also done downtowns of every major city. We've done, pretty much anything people ask for. Eventually we get it done and it's available. So, this sort of the sky's the limit on that. And I think it's actually, you know, like when somebody asks for a small town map and we have it, they're kind of surprised a lot of the time when it's like a super small town that they're not used to telling anybody and them knowing what that, like having heard of that town. And then they find their map, they're pretty, pretty happy about that. And it kind of, sometimes that also has an effect where they get the map and then they post it on their, you know, social media or whatever, and people from that town that are connected to them see it as well. So we'll get like a little rash of sales from that town. And, you know, some places it's like a graphic designer or an illustrator has never done anything related to that place before. So people kind of cherish that in a way, like, and I think that's the thing. It's like, if you live in a place like Toronto or even Hamilton, it's like there, you know, you can get 100 different, you know, representations or 1,000 different representations of your city, and you have lots and lots of artists to choose from. But sometimes the smaller the place, that's not as true. And so, like, it's a pretty special thing when somebody's able to find their small corner of the world. And get a map.
There's so many small towns in Canada, I guess everywhere. But it's funny that when you were saying all this, in the back of my mind I went, I wonder if he's ever approached the guys from Letterkenny, you know, that comedy series, because their whole show is based on a small town, if they ever did a Letterkenny map and sold it to them. Got a franchise for that.
Should I watch that show? I've given it like 10 seconds and it didn't get me, and so I don't know.
Well, you're talking to the guy that once when the first Nirvana album came out, he went, I don't care. So yeah, legit. And then I went back and listened to it, and then I listened to it, that's all I listened to for months on end, because I didn't get it at first. I'm like, I don't know, what am I supposed to like? And then I started listening to it more and more, and I went, oh yeah, I dig this, I dig that, you know. Like, I think that's the dismissiveness in my personality. I think it's I don't know if it's contrarian or this wannabe rebel of like, well, everyone likes this, so I'm not going to like it, or I'm not going to give it a chance, right? So
I think it's easier to do now too, especially with TV, where it's like, the problem is there's too many options of things to watch. So
yeah, there's too
it's
much.
Like if something doesn't grab you in the first 10 seconds, then it's easy to drop it right away.
Yeah. Your attention span is, and you've already started comparing it to something else you didn't like. So therefore I'm not going to watch this sort of thing. Right.
But there's no excuse for not liking Nirvana when they first came out.
I mean, exactly. Well, I will always carry that. I am the red letter Scarlet of that. And I freely admit it, that sort of thing. Matt, with everything that's going on now, there's the announcement of the vaccination, and we're hoping to get through these next couple of months where the possibility of things are, I should say, things will get better. Businesses can open up again, sort of thing. Where do you guys want to position yourself as far as the Jelly Brothers? Is there any other ideas coming up? Because you always want to like have something fresh for everyone. And you guys carry, like as you were saying throughout our chat, that there's like stock that you'll never throw away because someone will always want to buy it. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right. But but with that, is it since this pandemic, has it proven that you guys, two ways to look at it? I think personally, what's great about the Jelly Brothers is will always be the connection that people make when they meet yourself and Dan and talk about what you guys do. But now it seems with moving online, you guys may never have to like be in front of anyone again if sales keep up because everyone just buys things online.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see us not doing festivals if that's a reality that, you know, happens again. For me, I don't know exactly how this is going to play out. The end of the virus, it's like, are we still going to be wearing masks for a few years? Is that, you know, are we going to be sort of cautious that we can't do larger festivals the way we did? Because we're still kind of understanding how this vaccine works and whether it doesn't knock out the virus altogether. It just prevents the infection, kind of. But so I don't know. I'm trying not to have any expectations of, you know, a year from now what this looks like. We'd love, I think, to be doing festivals again because, like you say, it's sort of it part of our business is sort of that connection with people in person. There is a bit of that, and you know, it's sort of when we do an art crawl or you know, a festival, there's always a bit of like, because we're such sort of outspoken political people that that's sort of the secondary nature of the business is like people come to our booth just to chat about politics. Sometimes they're not necessarily there to even look at the artwork. It's like, there's kind of that community aspect of it that you don't get as much online. So I hope a year from now we're, you know, doing Christmas shows and stuff, but, I'm not going to set my, I don't think anybody should get their heart set on anything for the next, the foreseeable future. But yeah, like I can't, even if online business is doing really well, I would still want to be able to do festivals. There's something I like about, just the festival atmosphere. Like I love Peach Fest is one of my favorites. So as far as that goes.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, for me as an artist, like when I'm developing new posters and that kind of thing, I've always been this way where it's like the audience is a motivation for doing it kind of thing. And the feedback that you get from a new piece or, that kind of thing. And you post it on Instagram or whatever, and you get lots of great comments and likes and stuff. And that's always nice, but it sort of doesn't completely replace, you know, somebody flipping through my posters at my tent at a festival, and they're kind of looking through and saying, you know, you're a golden god, Matt Jelly.
Don't think those words were...
Getting that feedback, it's like also, you know, like sometimes I love when they don't necessarily know that I'm the artist and they're making comments on it, and I get to be just... You know, they might just think I'm some employee that's doing the festival circuit for this company or whatever, right. Doesn't care, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes I get to hear that stuff, and I love that stuff the most because I know they're not saying it for my benefit. They're just like, oh, I really like this, and it's like,
yeah,
good. That feels genuine to me. Yeah,
yeah. But at least it is like you say, it is genuine that when someone gives you some feedback, whether it's positive or negative, like at least you you're on the right track. But as far as sales go, but that doesn't really mean anything to someone who's an act. If you're an artist, does it not? Like for you to take it that personal, like you do something because you enjoy making it.
Yeah.
You know, like which could harken back to the beginnings of selling the Jelly Brothers stuff is that, you know, here's stuff that I'm making. If you want to buy it, buy it. But I like it. You know, I'm not making this for you. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say I do cater the product towards the customers in a way where it's like, yeah, I don't put anything out that I don't like. But it's like, I've kind of realized I've put some stuff out before that is totally to my taste. And it's like that stuff doesn't always sell as well as, you know, stuff that's more universal. Right. So there's a bit of a balance in that. There is a bit of pandering. it's pandering because, like, you know, honestly, I'm going to do a landmark or whatever that's more special to the person buying it than it is to me. If I do the lighthouse in Port Credit or whatever, you know, it's like it doesn't have the same meaning to me as it does to the guy who lives across the road. But that's the thing. I'm not the one buying the print. I'm the one drawing it, right? But, yeah. But, I mean, it's sort of, yeah. Like I said, it's a balance. Like, I don't do work that I dislike. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to chat with me, buddy. And what is the best way of people to get a hold of you as far as buying something or asking a question, whether or not you'll be doing a certain type of map or anything else? And if you take suggestions, just to give you some feedback on how to buy something or to give you guys some ideas.
Yeah, first place to go would be jellybrothers.com, and you can contact us there. There's a contact form. You can also email us at info@jellybrothers.com. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all just at Jelly Bros. Should get you there. I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys, and Dan's fairly active on the internet then, so he'll be checking this all the time, correct?
Yes, although I would say your best bet is to send an email. Sometimes we're not always on top of our Instagram our Instagram comments and stuff.
So, great.
Yeah, it's easier to contact us that way. But,
hey, buddy,
yeah.
thanks for the chat.
Awesome. Thanks, Gunnar.
You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
Hey, after a long day of interviews, I've finally come to the pinnacle of interviews for my day today. It is. It's the pinnacle. He's laughing, but it's the pinnacle. Today, I chatted with my old friend Mike Keir from Threshold Recording Studios, and he was such a chipper guy to talk to. And Ricky Butcher from Sons of Butcher. I mean, what a guy. Every song has an F-bomb in it. Just an absolute F-bomb in it. Actually, his new album's called F of 1,000 Fs or something. I'll never be able to play that on the show. You know, it's been a wonderful day of those type of interviews, and I thought I was doing really well. And then I thought, hey, what better way to cap off a day of interviews than talk to Hamilton's curmudgeoned dark rhymester? Is that, can I call him a dark rhymester? Am I allowed to do that?
Sure, man. You can.
I can do that? Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
Sure, yeah.
It's one of our oldest, dearest friends of the radio show, whatever incarnation that I have it in, whether it was Sounds of the Hammer or whatever stupid show I did at C101, Indie 101, and now The Hawk, which is now Steel City Music, the /website/radio show, Lee Reed. Hi, sir.
Woo! Hey, Gunnar. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I was, you know, just as we were recording, I was telling you, I'm not going to piss and moan about my life because there's so many other people that are in tough spots. I'm lucky enough that I'm old enough where I've experienced a lot of really stupid things and I can adjust, you know?
Yeah.
So I will be okay. How are you doing is the bigger question right now.
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. I'm the same. I can't really complain about my life. I was able to continue working, so.
Right.
Oh, pardon me. So that's been, I mean, you know, pivotal.
Right.
How everything's working out for me. I really miss music, and I miss, like, practicing and playing, and it kind of derailed all of that part of my life, but all said and done, I'm lucky, you know, healthy.
Sure.
You know, my loved ones are all healthy and everyone's doing okay. You know, some people have got some career in work kind of derailing going on, you know, but really, by all accounts, feeling lucky and, you know, just glad that my loved ones are too, you know.
It's, you know, I'm